Succession number 22344, reel 1. Major Grace, reel 1. Was there a family tradition of military service?
Not very direct. The nearest link is my uncle, who was a Mr. Cameron, and he was a member of the Cameron Highlanders. And so when the war was just about to break out, and it was obvious that I would have to do something, he said, why don't I join my regiment? And so in due course I did. Actually, I joined up in November 1940. That was just after I had passed the law finals as a solicitor. So I waited until that was over, and then I had Christmas at home and joined up in January 40 and joined as a raw recruit in the Cameron Highlanders in Inverness.
Had you done any pre-military training while you were at school?
None at all. I didn't join. I was at Westminster School and I did not join the Corps because I joined the Scouts. And although that wasn't military, it was very good training in many ways, the country crafts and knowing your way in difficult circumstances and doing all kinds of knots and all the rest of it. So it was good training in one way.
You were growing up in the period between the wars. Do you remember if there was a time when it occurred to you that another war was likely or probable?
Yes, in fact, all my young school days was more or less clouded by the thoughts. Now, there's bound to be a war. How soon is it going to come? I mean, we saw what was happening in Italy, in Germany, I mean, and I went, in 1933, I went to the Boy Scouts Jamboree in Hungary, and we passed right through Vienna, and we saw all the Nazis on the platform raising their hands and waving to us, Heil Hitler, and we thought this was all a great joke. But later on it became much less of a joke, and we realised how serious it was. So it did cloud my boyhood, yes.
Was there any particular event or moment at which you suddenly thought this war is unavoidable?
Well, 1938, the Czech crisis, but that's an obvious... everyone felt the same. I suppose that's the only really specific point that one could put your finger on.
Had you had any ideas about the way in which the next war might be fought, in a military sense?
Not really. I mean, I read about the Great War, and one had a certain sort of inkling as to what happened there. And we assumed it would not be a trench warfare quite in the same way as the Great War, but we really didn't know. We didn't know until it happened about the Blitzkrieg, for instance. And no, I was very vague about it.
And when you decided that you wanted to join and you were going to go and join your uncle's regiment,
yes.
Presumably, were you living in Inverness at the time?
No, we were living in Hertfordshire at the time, because I went to Westminster School, and then I became articled to a solicitor in London, so we were down here.
I mean, had you ever considered joining the Territorials? As
no, I hadn't really. It wasn't one of my interests at all. Afraid not. Had many others, but not that.
What happened when you went to volunteer up at Inverness?
Well, of course, it was a tremendous experience, what you now referred to as a culture shock. I quickly made friends, but I was mixing with sort of Glaswegian dockers and all that sort of thing. They were marvellous men, but quite the different sort of person for instance, in the big Nissen hut where we lunched, when I undressed on the first night and got into my pyjamas, they couldn't understand, why am I dressing up in fancy dress to go to bed? All they did, of course, was just to take the trousers off. It was as simple as that. But I quickly made friends. I had two very good friends. One was a shepherd from Skye, and so it shows the sort of people that I mingled with and learnt the rudiments of soldiery.
What did you actually do during your first weeks of basic training?
A lot of drill and weapon training, physical training, just the very, very basic things.
Were you physically fit when you joined?
Well, not as fit as I should be, because after so much book studying for my law finals, of course, I'd rather given up temporarily my sporting activities. So I don't think I was as fit as I should be, no, but that was soon rectified by the physical training and drilling and all the rest of it. So I soon became fit.
What were the methods of instruction used in this early stage?
Well, it was pretty basic, of course. The sergeants would shout at one, use the old time-honoured jokes about, don't look at me, I'm no oil painting, and all that sort of thing, all mixed with flowery language, which was not exactly drawing room, as you can imagine.
How did you take to the discipline? Did it come as a shock to you?
No, it didn't, actually. I thought it would, but somehow I realised it was all part of a team effort, and I rather liked it in a way. One rather resented the shouting methods of the NCOs, but even that became more or less acceptable after a few weeks.
How did you take to the uniform and the boots?
I can't remember. I suppose it just fitted in like everything else, or something quite strange, but here it was. This is my new life.
What about the food?
The food there was basic, but at the beginning of the war there was hardly any rationing. It was good. Basic, potatoes, meat, nothing very fanciful, of course, but in those days we were able to go out into Inverness and stock up with scrambled eggs and toast and things like that, so we could when we got off in the evening, we could all go out, go to the cinema, and implement our basic ration, what we buy.
And you were accommodated in Nissenhardt.
That's
many,
right.
How many men were there in the hut?
Oh, let's see, about, I think about 20, I think. And just one tap in the ablution part, one tap of cold water, that's all we got. I found that a bit hard, having to just stand around until you got your chance of a splash out underneath the tap and then shave accordingly. But even that, you got used to it after a bit.
In these early weeks, did you do any training in tactics?
Not in the early weeks, no. We saw the more advanced recruits going through the woods, and they were doing tactics, and we thought, well, that's coming to us very soon. And of course, after a few weeks, it did.
When it did, what sort of tactics were you practicing?
Oh, very basic, just how to move over the ground in what basic formations a platoon is divided up into, and nothing very much to begin with.
You mentioned physical training. What was the emphasis on the physical training on any particular aspect? Was it agility or strength or endurance? Do you remember?
I think it was just to bring one's muscles up to scratch and get your breathing right, get all your limbs flexible, just the usual sort of things that we'd done at school. There's nothing very original in the physical training. It just, there was quite a lot of it, and you had to do it rather intensely. That's about all. You remember, this is right at the beginning of the war, and I'm sure things were increased in general intensity as the months went by. In fact, I know they did, because, of course, I know how we treated our own troops later on.
Did you do any weapon training?
Oh, yes. Rifle and Bren guns, that's all.
Was there an opportunity for much range work or live firing?
Not to begin with at all, no. I didn't do any live firing. I don't think until I went to the Octu. I never remember going to any range. No, I don't think so.
Did all the members of the squad you were in when you joined manage to get through the basic training?
Well, no, one or two fell out as being quite unsuitable for military. I mean, they couldn't march. They had no sort of rhythm to keep step with other people, and they were hopelessly out on a limb, and they obviously couldn't have survived the training at all. So they were allowed to go home. What happened to them after that, I have no idea, but there were a few dropouts.
You mentioned marching. Did you do much in the way of route marching?
Yes, we did quite a bit. Fairly short to begin with, and every week you'd get a bit further until our feet got hardened and we didn't get so many blisters. And so we did a lot of marching, yes.
What sort of distances did you work up to when you were really good at it?
Distance. I think in those early days only about 10 miles, nothing very much.
Did you spend any nights out during this early
stage? No, not at all.
How was it that you were picked up for the Octu? What was the selection process?
Well, after 7 weeks I became an acting unpaid unwanted Lance Corporal, and then I think I was called to interview with the company commander and said, would you like to go to the Octu? This was after quite a short time, not more than 3 months at the most, and I went to Dunbar.
Do you remember what sort of questions you were asked at that interview with the...
With the company commander? No, it was just a chat. How are you enjoying yourself? Just a few casual questions. He'd obviously had some sort of report from the sergeant.
Did you see very much of the officers in those first weeks?
No, very little. It was mainly all NCOs work.
Were these NCOs regulars, do you know, or were they a mixture?
Well, I know the sergeant was a regular, and certainly the more senior NCOs were regulars, yes.
You were mentioning the other men, a lot of them were from Glasgow, and there was a shepherd from Skye. Were you the only Englishman in your squad?
Yes, although strictly speaking I had Scottish ancestors, but of course I was English in as much as I'd been living all my life in England, so yes. But my accent, of course, was very strange to them, naturally. But I think they understood me, and oddly enough, they all accepted me. I wasn't a fish out of water at all.
Do you think that was partly because you had volunteered for the regiment specifically?
Probably, yes.
Were they all volunteers, all those recruits?
Oh, no, I think a lot of them were conscripts. I was one of the few of the original volunteers, as far as I remember, yes.
What did they think about having been called up and put into the army?
Well, some resented it. Some resented having been dragged away from home and all their friends at home. But there again, I think the general attitude, the general feeling was that there's this bloody war on now, it's going to affect everyone's lives, and here we are, we've got to just be part of the war. And after all, everyone realised that sooner or later they would be called up, depending on their age and all that sort of thing.
What happened then when you got to the Octu at Dunbar?
Oh, that was a very different kettle of fish. They were even much more strict than they were in Inverness. And the CSM was absolute beast. What was he? Sergeant Murphy, I think his name. Murdo Grant, I think his name was. And he really was a beast, but...
In what way? What did he do that was very beastly?
Well, for instance, shouldering arms, You had to stand right up against the wall so that when you pulled your arms down, you couldn't help but graze your wrist against the brick wall, that sort of thing, quite unnecessarily to my mind. And his language was very fierce, always calling us sir, but nevertheless, sir, you're a bunch of so-and-so, and how do you think you're ever going to fight the war, and thank God there's a navy, all this sort of stuff that you hear over and over again. But he was very, very fierce indeed. But the lieutenant in, who was the, what you might call the platoon commander, was much better. He was fair, but strict too, particularly strict on keeping our arms spotlessly clean. If anyone got a touch of rust anywhere on his rifle, he'd be immediately up on a charge, naturally.
What would happen to you if you were on a charge?
Well, 7 days, CB, that sort of thing, just the routine, unless there was something much more serious, but I don't think there was much, really. I think we all, after all, we all wanted to become officers.
How were you organised on that course? Were you in formal platoons?
Or yes, you in formal platoons, yes.
And what about the other people in your platoon? Do you remember anything about them?
I can remember them, yes. Two of them were became well-known radio stars. What's the, of course, my age, I forget names, that's the trouble. That chap who's done the Down Memory Lane, he's been on the radio 50 years and more. And
Down Your Way?
Something like, yes, I think that's it.
Yes.
But they were a very nice bunch. They came from all over the place. There was one very rich man we called the Baron, and he used to send telegrams to Fortman and Masons to send a hamper of goodies, that sort of thing. And there were one or two poor class as well, so it was a really mixed bag. But I got on well with all of them. I made, alas, I've lost touch with them now, but during the 3 or 4 months I was there, it was very friendly.
What was on the syllabus of training at Dunbar?
Well, weapon training was important, and physical training was important, route marches, and then we also did a lot of tactical exercises, chutes, and of course on the ground, what do you call them, and they're losing some of the language now, when you go on schemes. Sort of mock battles.
Yes.
There's a special word for that. It's just escaped me.
Sham fights.
Something like that. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Opposed exercises.
Yes. Yeah. That's
opposed
right.
Yes. What sort of scale of tactics were you learning at this stage?
Well, of course, by the time we finished the OCTU course, we'd done quite a lot, and I think you could say all the rudiments required for an infantryman we went through, including movement by vehicles. We did an exercise going through the mountains with vehicles, keeping at the proper distance and the proper speed, and each officer of course had his own 1500 weight truck that he was supposed to be in charge of and bringing to, for some very specific reason, and how to manoeuvre your platoon, of course, and also, of course, how to look after the men, and the general hierarchy of the strata of officers from second lieutenant upwards, and how they all fit into the plan. How a battalion works is distinct from a platoon and a company. So that you got an overall picture. So by the time you became commissioned, hopefully you had a pretty good groundwork of what was expected of a young officer.
When you did your actual tactical exercises on the ground, what scale were they? Did you go to company or battalion level, or was it primarily platoon level?
It was primary at platoon level, but we did do one or two larger exercises in which, say, a battalion was involved, so that we could see exactly how the platoons and the companies and the various officers, like the signals, the intelligence and the adjutant and so on, how they all fitted into the big scheme and what was required of each officer at his particular level.
You mentioned opposed exercises and tutes as two forms of instruction. Did you ever get instructed using the sand table?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did that quite a bit. Well, not so occasionally, but I can't remember now how frequently. We certainly did it, yes.
Do you have any notion of roughly what proportion of your time was spent outdoors as opposed to indoors when you were doing these?
Well, I should say at least three quarters, if not more, outdoors.
It sounds like the emphasis is really on the practicalities.
Very much so. Oh, yes, definitely.
And did you do all the phases of war, advanced contact, attack, defence, withdrawal?
Yes, that's right. And choosing sites for defence.
Appreciation of ground.
That's right. It was very much about appreciation of ground. And in a way, that's where my training as a Boy Scout stood in good stead.
When you were doing defence and appreciating ground for defence, what kind of positions were you thinking of constructing, either in theory or in practice? Were you, what sort of field works and so forth were you taught to construct?
Well, I think it was mainly just at platoon level for this, because how to advance over ground, and how, of course, if you go into an attack, there must be covering fire given, how, say, a platoon divides up so that you get a small attack on in the centre and, say, covering fire from the flanks, and then how you would move forward in this formation, and in what circumstances one has to use some other kind of tactic rather than that basic one. And as a matter of fact, that came in very useful when the real thing happened. You had to be flexible. You mustn't be tied up with a sort of definite movement. You must be able to appreciate what has to be done in the circumstances and in the fog of war.
Was there an emphasis on outflanking movements when you were attacking a notional enemy, or?
Well, that was part of it. I don't think you'd say it was just an emphasis on it. No.
What about when you were digging in? What sort of positions would you
create? There again, of course, we had to learn where was the best place to dig so that you had a certain amount of cover from the trench, and that the position with regard to the view towards where the enemy might be, so you've got a good field of fire, in other words. That's a very important fact. To choose your field of fire and at the same time get a certain amount of protection from the way you build your slit trench.
When you did your slit trench, was it a one-man slit trench or a two-man trench? Or
normally two.
Two-man slit
trench? Yes. There again, it could vary according to circumstances.
Did you consider, in theory or in practice, the possibility of cooperation with other arms, such as artillery support? Or
yes, we learned a bit about that, certainly. What we didn't learn at the OCTU, but we did learn before we went overseas, was cooperation with tanks, which is very important, and of course with the Navy.
What about the Air Force? Do you remember any?
Not very much, no. Very little with the Air Force, because I think that was more or less left to a higher command. I mean, at least at commanding officer level. No, we had very little to do, apart from when we got to Africa, we used to have yellow silk triangles. That was about the only way we had of letting our presence be known to our own troops, our own air force.
Did everyone who went on the Octo in your platoon complete it, or did you have dropouts from the Octo as you had from basic training?
I think we all got through. As far as I can't remember anyone dropping out. There was always the threat of being returned to unit, RTU, but I can't remember it actually happening. I suppose it must have happened to some people. They didn't make the grade and so they were sent back. I don't think there were many cases of that, though. When one was commissioned, the recommendation coming from the OCTU was according to grades, whether you'd made it with recommended or whether you just sort of scraped through. So there was a report sent to your new commanding officer when you first joined.
Do you know how they assessed you, what criteria they applied and how they applied them while they were making their minds up about whether
One obviously was leadership, strength of character, and general efficiency, whether one was good at weapon training, that was always given much emphasis, whether you were physically fit and strong enough to be a leader. I think all the fairly obvious things like that.
Were these qualities subjected to formal tests, or was it based upon the opinion of your instructor?
Oh yes, based on the opinion. I think every week they made an assessment as how you were going. So you were always being watched and graded and either encouraged or rebuked. So I think that the end product was based entirely on the recommendation over the whole of the, what was it, 3 months, 4 months? I forget. 4 months, I think.
What about time off while you were at the Octo?
We had one interlude of a long weekend, that's all. Oh, and time off. Yes, in the evenings we got a certain amount of time off. So we could go and make friends with various families in Dunbar. But the time spent in training was pretty long. It was long hours.
Was there lots of homework to do in the evenings before you could?
Quite a bit. And we had one or two air raid warnings. And then, of course, we had sentry duties. That's something I forgot to mention. So every man had to do his turn, which meant, of course, you got virtually no sleep all night. And so you had to be fit enough to carry on the next morning, quite regardless. There's no concession made for the fact that you've been up all night.
On guard.
That's right.
Was there any sort of formal social life as part of this? Dinner nights and things like that?
No, there wasn't really. No, very little. So that was really, that didn't come until you joined your regiment. No, there was very little social life at all, apart from what you could make yourself if you made friends with people in Dunbar. Which we did. That's all.
Do you think that on the whole it was a good basic training for life as an officer?
I think it was. It was recognised that Dunbar was recognised as being one of the really tough OCTUs. It was very tough. But basically I think it was very, looking back after, say, what one had to do as an officer, especially when you actually joined the war itself, it was very good training.
How were you allocated to your regiment, the Queen's Own Camerons? Because it's not automatic to be sent back to your own.
I think one was allowed to have a choice. Whether you'd necessarily get your choice is another matter. But I certainly chose to go back, and I did.
Was there a system of regimental interviews or anything of that sort to decide where you were going to be sent?
If there was, I don't remember. I don't think so, no.
Well, I think you were posted back to Inverness.
That's right.
The Queen's Own Cameron.